Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes, and I am the host of this show and also the Chief Executive Officer of our network. I want to welcome you today. If you're listening for the first time, you have found one of the best-kept secrets in all of tennis on today's show and with the other shows that we produce, and I'll be letting you know about those shortly. As I mentioned last week, we've approached the 1600, and we're over the 1600 hour mark when it comes to interviews. So we'd hope that you would not only listen to this one, but listen to the many others that we've offered through the course of 4 years of on-air time. And we're so excited that we're in that fourth year, looking to go to number five here before long. And just want to thank you for making it all possible. Each and every week, we come to our listeners and offer up those interviews that you're not going to find on other media outlets, and so grateful that you've joined us today as we bring in Tony Minnis. Tony is a former college coach, a big-time college coach in the SEC from the LSU Tigers, and he's been busy outside of his days in college tennis with a great program, great television program produced and put on the tennis channel. And that's Inside College Tennis, and that's why we've got Tony back today to talk about those things. We'll be bringing Tony in here shortly. It'll take just a little bit. I want to remind you that we also have other shows on the UR Tennis Network. We do have the Parenting Aces show, which comes on Tuesday at 11 o'clock Central Time. That's with Lisa Goodman Stone, and I would highly recommend that you catch that episode or episodes. She does a wonderful job of exploring junior tennis and what it's like to be a parent in the high school world going into college. And we also have American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. Chuck being one of the greatest coaches in college tennis, always a firecracker, not really a firecracker, more like a stick of dynamite or the nuclear bomb out there that goes off when you hear and need things talked about in American tennis and in college tennis, which he's very passionate about. He comes live from the Citadel, and that's Wednesday morning. He comes on 11 o'clock Central Standard Time. And then a new show that we've added with the help of John Denise. John is the executive director of the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association, and we had him on the air a few weeks back now. But John is bringing his legions into the UR tennis world, and we're so excited that he has joined us. And we anticipate many good things coming from that show. You can catch that show Thursday afternoon, and it'll be at 5:30 Central Standard Time. And we look forward to the many shows that he puts on with his Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association. And so I wanted to, before Tony gets in here, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the rankings that are out there. And we'll talk just Division I here before we get Tony on air. But some interesting developments there in Division I. We're going to start with, let's go with Division I men first. I'm sure Tony keeps up with it, but not maybe as much as he does the women. As to date, and these rankings came out yesterday, very heavy laden with the Big Five super conferences. Number one, University of South Carolina. Number two, the University of Oklahoma, number 3, University of Virginia. Now, those were the same last week as they are this week, but now we've had some major changes here. Moving up from number 7 is the University of Georgia, from number 8, the University of Illinois, and they now sit at number 5. Duke University has moved up into the from the top 10, or actually top 11, inside the top 10 to number 6. North Carolina, number 7, Ohio State, number 8, number 9, University of Texas, and number 10, tied with Baylor, is UCLA, which drops from number 4 all the way down to number 10. And you'll notice that most of those schools, if not all of those schools, reside in the top 5. Now, the women, for some reason, didn't put out there. And I know that it has to do with the indoor team championship that's going to be going on, that they didn't rank those teams, but we'll go with what they had the week before. UCLA at number 1, University of Florida at number 2, North Carolina number 3, Duke University at number 4. California moved up from the number 6 spot to number 5. Baylor moved up from the number 9 spot to the number 6 spot. University of Alabama at 7, Stanford at 8. Georgia at 9, and University of Virginia, which fell from number 5 to number 10. And again, heavy laden with those Power 5 conferences, and with Tony coming on the air, we're going to talk a little bit about those Power 5 conferences and what he saw in his time there at LSU that makes those conferences so powerful. Super conferences is what we call them. We've got many things to talk about, Tony, so I'm going to bring him on the air and see how things are. Tony, are you there?
Jason, how you doing?
Oh, I'm having a great day, Tony. We've got semi-chilly weather here in Tyler, Texas. I imagine it's the same for you over there.
Raining and cold. So it's probably 40s and pouring down rain all day. So hopefully that spring comes around a little faster.
Yeah, well, I hope so. It's not that much fun for a tennis guy to have the cold, wet weather. Now, Tony, you've got many special things going on with you, and we're going to talk a lot today about some of these different things. But the whole reason that you come on our show is because you host Inside College Tennis, which is a great TV program that you and a handful of people got together and produced for the Tennis Channel. How many shows have y'all put out there, Tony?
We've done 4 that have aired, and 3 are going to air within the next month. So a total of 7 right now. So it's come along pretty good. It's you know, the first few shows, you get a feel for, you know, the production company kind of gets a feel for it, the lay of the land, and I'm learning a lot too. And I think these last shows were a bit better. I think it's more of a human interest story on a couple of them, and I think people really appreciate the entertainment value of what we put out there.
And Tony, these 4 shows, I mean, you and your production crew had the chance to go to the top universities in the United States with their tennis programs. You could have gone to Stanford, you could have gone to UCLA, you could have gone to Georgia, but you and your crew decided to do something a little bit different, right?
Well, I think that when this idea came up a couple of years ago, actually about a year and a half, when we sat down, we wanted to show a picture of for all student athletes, not necessarily just, you know, the top 50 or top 100, to really give insight to what it's like at smaller schools, what it's like at Division II, JUCO, HBCUs. And so initially when we first started talking about it, we wanted to really, for example, you know, in tennisrecruiting.net, there are plenty of kids ranked between 300 and 500 that can get a great education, have a great college experience, and may not really understand how much opportunity there is at some of the smaller schools. So I think that, the you know, from a standpoint of interest, Southern New Hampshire, I had a blast there. It was a great show. The campus was beautiful. And I was floored when I saw just how nice it was, an opportunity that you had. And that's something, me being in tennis as long as I have, didn't know about. And so there's a ton of opportunities for kids all across the country to play college tennis. And I think it's important to not just look at the Stanfords and Georgias and USCs, but to look at some of the smaller schools because there is opportunity there.
So, Tony, why don't you tell my listeners what schools that you have covered?
We initially started out with TCU, Tulane, Wichita State, and Texas Tech. And our upcoming show, which airs this Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Central, is going to feature the HBCU National Championship. And this show, I think it's really important and it's very interesting. HBCUs are historically black universities. And what we did is we did a tie-in to the HBCUs and the American Tennis Association, which is the oldest African-American sports organization in the country. And for example, without the American Tennis Association, you don't have an Arthur Ashe, you don't have enough Dave Gibson. The organization, it was at a time when African-Americans can participate in tournaments, so the ATA formed their own organization and had national tournaments every year. And what's interesting is those national tournaments took place on HBCU campuses. So we basically are doing the history of African-American tennis in the U.S., and they're coming up on the ATA is coming up on its 100th anniversary, and they're building a $28 million Black History Museum and also a training center in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So I think when people watch the show, it's more documentary style. It's very interesting and intriguing. You know, Zena Garrison, Rodney Harmon, Lori McNeil, all those players, Leslie Allen, came through the ATA. The second show that we did that's going to air on February 15th, 7 p.m. Eastern, is Southern New Hampshire. And Southern New Hampshire is a Division II school in Manchester, New Hampshire, and it has about 5,000 students. If anybody watches a decent amount of TV, you'll see advertisements for Southern New Hampshire online. TNT on ESPN and all these different networks. They have 50,000 online students. However, they also have a campus that is absolutely gorgeous. Tennis program's really good, and you'll see as you watch the show just how well they've done over the years. But also, it was voted by, I can't remember which magazine, the 11th most innovative business in the world in, I want to say, 2012. And as you watch the show and see how the buildings, facilities, the landscape, it's absolutely gorgeous. And then our third show, which is going to air on March 1st at 7 p.m., the University of Minnesota. We have one of the Power Five conferences, but at the same time, the environment there is unbelievable. Minneapolis is a great city, and it's in the heart of Minneapolis, the university is. And the Baseline Tennis Center is a 10-court indoor facility. They've got a nice outdoor facility, and both teams over the years have done pretty well. I think the men's team right now looks like they're kind of knocking on the door. I looked at the rankings. I think possibly, if not top 25, near it. And the women's team has been solid. It looks to me like they've got some young kids, and they're getting better and better. So I think what you'll see in these three shows, you're going to see three very different shows. The HBCU is different from the standpoint of, you know, there's plenty of opportunity, plenty of schools, but I don't think people really understand, you know, how important HBCUs have been to the development of the ATA and tennis in the African-American community. And I think also Southern New Hampshire shows that, hey, you can go and play at a very good level at a Division II school and have a great experience. And in Minnesota is very unique because I think that people think it's so cold up there and this and that. But while we were there in late October, it was nice, it was gorgeous, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, Tony, now when you talk about the HBCU championships, can you tell us what schools are there whenever you go? And are they all Division I schools or do they have different divisions?
No, Prairie View, Howard, Southern University, Grambling, Florida A&M, Bethune-Cookman, Tuskegee, Xavier, North Carolina A&T. There were 22 schools there, and I think here's what's happened, and this is a good comparison. Years ago in basketball, you see these small teams that come in and upset, they get to Final Four and upset these big-time teams. Well, what this happened in tennis is the smaller conferences get automatic bids. So a team like a Howard can win their conference and qualify for the NCAA tournament. And so it's easier for the schools to go out and say, hey, look, you know, come to Howard, come to Hampton, come to Morehouse, Southern University, and you'll have the opportunity, if we can win the conference, to compete in the NCAA tournament. And I think that has really elevated the level of the HBCU schools, because now they're also able to compete against some of the top schools, not only in season, but in postseason too.
Well, that's good that the NCAA has recognized that, and I applaud them many a time for including those smaller conferences. We need that diversity within the championships, and it is admired that they include is it the Southern Conference there with the Prairie View and Southern?
That's the SWAC.
SWAC, yes.
That's the SWAC, yeah. When I was at LSU, we played Southern every year, Prairie View every year, played Grambling, and I'm noticing more and more that a lot of those schools are playing, you know, a lot of the SEC and Big 12 and ACC schools. So I think it's good because it spreads it out more to where, you know, you have that opportunity no matter where you're ranked coming out of high school to compete against all levels of competition.
Well, when I was at Lee, we would play Prairie View A&M. They were in our backyard, so we would travel over there to them. And you could tell through the years that Coach Cochran was doing a great job down there recruiting better and better players. And I guess just forgive me here. I mean, it's got to be tough to recruit to these schools when you're competing with these top athletes to go to the bigger schools, right, Tony?
Oh, there's no question. And as we'll talk later, you know, with the monetary situation at different schools, it's the playing field is not level by any stretch of the imagination. But at the same time, you know, it's an opportunity to go to some of these schools and develop and get better and show what you can do in competition. So it's a good thing. You know, I think it boils down to money. You know, what do you have? What can you offer? What can you provide? And from the rich to the poorish, the divide is just getting greater and greater as things change, as things go on.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that definitely as we go through this episode. Tony, I'm disappointed. This is only a 30-minute show. Are you guys talking about going to an hour? I mean, this is good stuff, this stuff you put out on TV.
I think we're going to stick with 30 minutes. The amount of time that the producers put into this show, it's unbelievable. Just they're very organized and on top of things and making sure that they're, you know, doing every little, very meticulous with everything. So I think that we're going to stick with 30 minutes for now. We'll see as time goes on. But it's a lot. I had no idea coming from college coaching, just broadcasting a TV show, just how much went into it. And every time I talk to Flo, who is one of the producers, she's always telling me, I'm tired of looking at you, and I have to go through and edit and make corrections and probably correct me a zillion times and just make sure it looks good. So it's a lot of work, and we'll see. I mean, we're kind of happy with the path that we're on now, and we'll see how things go as we kind of forge ahead in the future.
Well, the Tennis Channel seems to be supporting it. I'm glad to see that you've gotten more episodes added. I mean, at first we were really skeptical and wondered what was going to happen with this show, and you've hit I don't want to say a home run. You've hit an ace here, Tony.
Yeah, I think it's a high-quality show. You know, they have had a lot of experience, God, for over 30 years in producing different shows and won Emmys for producing, yeah, I think, shows on Discovery Channel and things like that. So I think that the quality of the show, the production, is the key to it. And, you know, if you get a chance to watch it, it's done in a very first-class manner. And that's what I mean. You know, I'll go over and I'll do voiceover, and it's got to be perfect. It's very, you know, meticulous as far as making sure that you're, you know, pronouncing everything right, doing everything right, and that's what makes them as good as they are. So we'll see. We'll see how the future comes along, but right now we're very excited about the upcoming shows.
Yeah, now, can you tell us something that you learned at the HBCU championships that maybe you didn't understand before you went out there?
What did I learn? I think that I always knew the level was pretty good, but it was a little better than I thought. It was, and just the opportunities, the scholarship that you have, the opportunities to go out, and, you know, each of these schools has 8 scholarships for women, and the schools that do have the programs have 4.5 for men. I walked away from Southern New Hampshire and from the HBCU thinking to myself, God, there's a lot of kids that have a chance to play at schools and just don't know about it, and it's important to get that word out, because a lot of people don't even realize that how into Florida A&M, Althea Gibson went to school there. Okay, I didn't know that. I mean, she's, you know, probably one of the greatest women's tennis players in history, and she actually, I think, played on the men's team at FAMU because they didn't have a women's team. So it's a lot of informative information that you're going to, as you watch the show, that's going to really pop in your head when you see it. But it's a very good show, and I think it's very well done.
Yeah. Now, Tony, you show up at the HBCU championships. How long does it take you guys? I mean, are you there filming all day, every day?
Typically, any show we do, it's about 2.5 days. And probably a lot of the filming that we do and interviews, what they do is they go in and they look at and take bits and pieces of each. So we were there. We got there, I want to say it was Thursday afternoon. We were there all day Friday, and there most, well, Saturday to about 2, 3 o'clock. So it's a lot of work. I mean, it's a lot more than you would realize, because there's so many, you know, angles and shots and, you know, how you're talking to people and what you're doing. There's so many things that go into it that before I got into this, I had no idea existed.
I bet so. You're just coaching college tennis matches, Tony. You weren't worried about TV and all that. So this is definitely a new experience for you.
It's very interesting looking at it from this side of it. Like when I'm watching coaches coach and I see some kids making a bad decision, I just kind of kick back and just go, okay, I'm going to have to deal with that right now. You can go, I know you're about to book, but it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it a lot and you know, looking forward to doing more shows in the future.
Now, since you were at LSU, I mean, have you developed kind of a fandom with some of these schools that you've gone out to and seen? Do you admire them a little bit more now when you see, after you step off your campus there at LSU and you arrive at, say, Texas Tech or University of Minnesota or even Southern New Hampshire? It sounds like made a deep impact on your coaching and your person.
I tell you what, I follow every school that we've got a show on, without question. And it's kind of neat. Like Texas Tech, you know, I remember last year when he thought they were going to be way down and they ended up making the intake tournament. And I saw Tulane has a guy who got to the semis or the finals of the national indoors. And obviously Minnesota's men just had a big win. So, and Wichita State's women just beat Arkansas. So it's cool when you know, you go and you spend time. And I know all these guys to begin with, but it's in a different mantra now because of the show. And we're, you know, all of a sudden you're following them and you're pulling for them. And it's fun and it's pretty neat. And it is too. I appreciate too, because when I look back when I was coaching, it's like, okay, we're going to play TCU. Let's get to the courts at this time. Let's, you know, drill at this time. We play at this time. And never would you spend time on the campus. During the shows enabled me to go and really view these campuses and see things that I've never seen before, even though I've been to a lot of them. And I think Minnesota is a prime example, one of the prettiest campuses I've seen. And I've been there 3 or 4 times before this and never really spent any time. So it's a whole different outlook for it, because as I tell people, instead of worrying about 10 girls, I'm just worrying about myself. And so it makes it easy to just kind of, you know, venture off and kind of do some different things.
Sure, Tony. Now, it sounds like that these schools should be beating down the door to have you come on and do a show. I mean, you're somewhat kind of a good luck charm.
Hopefully, you know, that's what I'm trying to put out there. So, yeah, hopefully so. We'll see. We'll see how this continues to go. Actually, if they start having too much success, I might have to get some kickbacks or something, but we'll see what happens.
I definitely hope that happens for you. And now I listen to you. You went to Southern New Hampshire first and then to the HBCU.
No,
is that the way this was planned out?
No, we went to the HBCU in September in Southern New Hampshire, early October.
Okay.
And when we went to Southern New Hampshire, go ahead, I'm sorry.
This was the first time that and you guys went from Division I to Division II, and this is what I preach a lot here on our show is the diversity of all these divisions. So, can you give me first impressions? I mean, we know that you thoroughly enjoyed the campus and all, but of tennis, first impressions there, D2 tennis up at Southern New Hampshire?
That whole trip floored me. And when we first got there, the women's team was practicing, and I was watching, and I was thinking to myself, there are a couple of girls that could have helped me at LSU. and I was going, this level is pretty good. And then the guys came and started hitting, and like an idiot, I said, yeah, let me mix in, you know, with some of these guys. And all of a sudden, Jason, the ball comes a lot harder than I remember, man, back when I was at the Prince Graphite. And, you know, I didn't stretch or anything. And I think there's a clip of me. It looks like I'm almost falling down and hit a volley. But I think that they signed maybe four-star boys or three-star boys. I can't remember. And the level was fine. It was good. And I was quite surprised that it was. And that's what made me start thinking to myself, you know, there's so many kids that walk on teams that could have an opportunity to play the Division II or Division III and have a great experience and have some memories for the rest of your life instead of trying to force it to go to some of these top teams and be number 12 on the team. You could go to Southern New Hampshire. And, again, it's a very good level. It's not like it's that – obviously, from the top schools, there's a little bit of drop-off, but it's not as much as people would think. So I was stunned by I thought the level was good, facilities were nice. It was basically, you were doing everything that I had done throughout my career as far as NCAA rules and practice and conditioning and that stuff. I'd have to say, though, it was a little looser and fun, and I think that was a very good thing.
Tony, now I know this because of all my years there at Lee, that these divisions are very deep if you run into some tough schools. And Division II being just right underneath, you know, Division I was always an area that I thought Division I should use a little bit more of, because they could put them on the schedule, get some good solid matches, and quite possibly maybe encounter a kid that could transfer to a school if they really enjoyed things. I mean, we had it years ago when Joey up at Baylor picked up a girl from Armstrong Atlantic and brought her over, and she ended up doing real well at the NCAA level. And it's that depth and that diversity, and it's nice to hear that Southern New Hampshire carries that on up north. And, you know, did you get the feeling? I'm just curious myself. Did you get the feeling like, you know, I could coach at D2, I could coach at D3 NAIA, and I would still get the same feelings that I had there at LSU?
No doubt. As we're talking, I'll tell you a pretty funny story. I was very fortunate to be on a really good college tennis team, the University of Louisiana Lafayette, and throughout my whole career, we were, you know, between 11 and 25 in the country. So we all go play tournaments, and over Christmas. And so I go to Atlanta at Georgia Tech, and I play this tournament. And there's a guy, I think from Lander College, and his name was Yaya Dumbia. And so I got him playing, and I mean, he's got good. And ended up losing a match, like 3-4, and I thought I played pretty well. And I come back, and we're in a team meeting, and he's asking everybody what happened over Christmas. And I said, you know, I lost to a guy named Yaya Dumbia. And I got ragged so hard by my teammates, my coach, like, you lost to Yaya. It turned out, I want to say maybe about 2 years later, a year later, this guy ends up like top 60 in the world, ATP. I mean, he was actually a really good player. Another quick story, again, we were recruiting a guy, not very hard, in college that was at a small college, Division III college in Georgia. And I remember a guy named Jay Bailey was telling me, hey, this guy's a good player. His name's Paul Harhus. And so he ended up not, you know, nobody had heard of him. He ended up not coming to our school, ended up going to Florida State, and ended up, I want to say, top 20 in the world and number one of the world doubles. And he's famous for that long point where Connors kept throwing those lobs up in the U.S. Open quarterfinal match. But there's so much, you know, talent across the board, and you just never know when you're looking at different players. There have been a multitude of players on the men and women's side that have gone to Division II, III, JUCOs and transferred over. And so you're getting a good competitive level, and it's something that I think kids and parents especially really need to pay attention to and need to look at very carefully.
You know, it sounds like at Southern New Hampshire, you got some coaches there that are interested in player development. I mean, if they're recruiting American kids, they've got a tough job in front of them to go out and play these international kids versus some of these schools that have good used car salesmen that bring in just, you know, international students. Is that the case that you noticed there at Southern New Hampshire?
No, Greg Koch, this guy is like energy galore. It's unbelievable. He's like all over the place. He truly has a passion for what he does and truly loves the university. And he had, I want to say, probably the majority of Americans on both men and women's team. He had some international, but it was majority Americans. And he just enjoyed. He has a Koch Tennis Academy that he does outside of coaching, but he works very hard. I can tell he does individuals and is into development and stuff and really locked in on what he's doing. So he's, to me, was really a pleasure to get to meet and get to know and become good friends with. And he actually done a phenomenal job there. I mean, he's been coach of the year numerous times and made the NCAA tournament several times. And I think he has a philosophy of, and as you'll see when you see the show, he's trying to get his players better.
And, Tony, how many students did you say attend Southern New Hampshire total?
Well, 50,000 online, but 5,000 at the school itself.
So you got 55,000 students. They must have had some kind of good walk-on program there at Southern New Hampshire, right?
I'm not quite sure about the walk-on program. I'm not sure. I think he had 8 girls, maybe 10 guys. I think I'm not 100% sure, but he had them. You know, he had a kid from Germany, and he recruits pretty much nationwide. I know he definitely focuses on the area of the country in that New England area, and you know, New York around there. But he will definitely recruit anywhere in the country.
Well, then you moved from Southern New Hampshire over to University of Minnesota. Now, this is, you know, you've encountered these Power Five conferences before, but this is the farthest one, I guess, up north that you've gone to, huh?
Yeah, Chuck and Jeff are really good guys, and I've known Chuck since my freshman year in college. We competed against each other, and I've always felt like he has it in perspective. You know, he always did it the right way and, you know, would never cheat and always worked hard and built a good teams. And getting to know Jeff, I kind of knew his wife a little bit because she played at Minnesota, but I mean, he seems to have done a real nice job. I know they've made the NCAA tournament, I want to say maybe 7 out of the last 9 years. And from my understanding, he's got probably his best team this year. I saw they just knocked somebody off and moved up in the rankings. So it was neat. I've been up to Minneapolis as my first assistant coaching job way back in 1990. And then at LSU, we played there 3 or 4 times, like in the fall. But it was really neat because they've got the Baseline Tennis Center, which is a 10-court indoor. And what struck me there is the community support that they have from people within the city that that you know comes to matches and support the program and donate money and do different things. And besides it being the tennis center for the men and women's tennis programs, I know that there's a pro there and they teach lessons and people play. So that was actually nice because, again, from a surprise standpoint, whenever you say Minnesota, people ain't thinking tennis, let me tell you. They're thinking, you know, ice hockey and other things like that. So it was really neat to kind of go there and showcase a lot of the things that they do and also show that we were there, I want to say, at the very end of October, and it was nice. I mean, it was like, you know, 60 degrees, and it was – they're pretty pleasant. Now, right now it might be a little different, but at that time it was pretty nice.
Yeah. Now, where do you go from here, Tony? I mean, are you planning on doing more shows in the spring, going out and filming more shows, or will you wait to the summer, or what's the case with you guys?
Yeah, we're not sure. I met with them this morning, and we're talking. We've had about 3 or 4 different people approach us about seriously doing some stuff. So we're going to probably, once they're in a process of, they're not quite finished with the Minnesota show, and I think probably in the middle of next week we'll meet and discuss where we go next. We're talking to, you know, different companies and different schools about future shows.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. And then what I love about your show is that it doesn't just air once. I mean, it airs several times so that people that miss it live for the first time, they can go back and watch it. And it seems like the Tennis Channel's giving you guys a lot of good support.
Well, I was going to say, I'm glad you mentioned that, because each show will premiere and rerun 4 times, and it's real spread out. So it's going to premiere February 7th. The first show, and the last show will be replayed like at the end of April. So it's spread out really nicely, and if people miss any particular show, they'll have more than enough opportunity to catch up and see the others.
Very good. Now, Tony, we're going to change direction here just a little bit. If anyone has a call, a question for Tony, you can call in at 714-583-6853. Again, that's 714-583-6853. Tony, we've had a lot of changes since you and I have left college tennis. In particular, where I'm going to talk about these format changes going on within the dual match world. Are you familiar with the changes that have gone on?
Yes, I am.
So, in your opinion, I mean, is this going to make a great deal of time difference in a dual match? I mean, and let me refresh everybody. We've taken out the warm-ups against each other's opposing teams, and we've gone to no-add scoring, and we've shortened the doubles from 8 games to 6 games. What do you think, Tony? Are we crazy here?
My personal opinion is this is about money. This is all about money, and basically, you know, it's getting to a point where athletic directors sit down and they look and they say, okay, my football's on X number of times a year, basketball, my volleyball, soccer, softball's on, worse tennis. And I think that from their standpoint, they're wanting to create a format where there's a window that can realistically be televised. And I think that, this is my opinion, I think that they're trying to shorten the matches to be able to make it more TV-friendly, and that's why you're seeing a lot of these changes. And do I think it's good for tennis? No. Do I think that it's even going to work? I just think tennis on TV is tough. I definitely think it could be done, but I'm not so sure that continuing to chop away and shortening it is necessarily going to be the best interest for the long term of the game.
Well, Tony, what do you think about the idea that instead of enhancing the player experience, we're shortening that and we're giving the fan more experience in the tennis matches? Do you buy into that?
Well, I think things are totally hypocritical. For instance, when I played college tennis, we could play 40 matches in a year. We all did fine academically. Well, the NCAA comes in and says that, okay, that's too many times away from school, missing too much class. We need to make it more student-athlete academically. So they cut tennis, but then you look on the other side, and baseball plays 60 games. They add football games to where, you know, then basketball plays a ton of games. So I don't understand what – I think in shortening the format, it would be easier to accept if there were more dates available. And so what you're seeing now, you're seeing teams play double and triple headers. I had a friend of mine, I was so laughing so hard at, he played like a quadruple header, and I was like, dude, what are you doing? You know, just on the court all day. But with them passing the rule that now you have to have a 500 or winning record to make into a tournament. And then with these, okay, let's, if I'm at LSU now, 13 matches are automatically scheduled based on my conference. Yeah. I have no choice but to play 13. So then if I'm going to play indoors, that's two more. That's 15. So I have 25 total dates. Five will be tournaments. I have five schools that I've got to pick out, okay, who am I going to play? And you want to, you know, try to schedule a couple teams you feel very confident you can beat. So it makes it, it's going to make it more and more difficult to have the experience that I had as a player, where at the University of Louisiana Lafayette, we had a great team, but to even get a chance to play some of these schools now, it's going to be tough just because of the dates and the money and everything there. So, you know, it's hard to say why these things are happening, but at the same time, the thing that's easiest to point to, baseball and softball, I think play about 60 games. In tennis, you're playing 20. So I don't know why it would be any more difficult for a tennis player as opposed to a baseball player academically.
Yeah, and Tony, you mentioned, you know, TV airtime, and that's something I question in all this, because I can't just see hundreds of thousands of fans on TV watching college tennis matches. I mean, are you of that same opinion?
No, I think if you look at the pros, I just don't think tennis is a sport that, you know, when Djokovic and Murray play in the Australian Open, I'm not sitting down for four consecutive hours watching that. I'm doing other things, flipping around. There may be people that do, but I'm not one of those. And I just think that the sport itself, is, I think a lot of this is the nature of our sport. And I've been at matches where we've had some close five-hour matches, and we've had fans stay the majority of the time. I'm not so sure that there's no doubt making it shorter will probably enhance fans coming out more, but at what cost? I mean, what about golf? So are you all of a sudden going to do the same thing with golf? So, it's hard to say, but I think that I've always felt that these kids don't play enough don't play enough tournaments and this and that. And the way you get matched up and the way you get better and the way you improve your game is to get out and play matches. And I just think that, in my opinion, the biggest issue is the dates getting cut to basically 20 dual matches. And so packing them all in where you're playing two a day several times makes it difficult.
I, I can respect what you and your team at Lafayette did. The older generation there did. You were on court a lot, and like you mentioned, 40. You know, could have played maybe 60 matches in a year. And I think that's one of the things that's going to propel our top juniors to stay away from our sport, the really serious pro-minded juniors, because college tennis is no longer a reflection of professional tennis. It's now changing. And so why would a top junior, like, say, a Stevie Johnson or even a John Isner, consider going to college because they're playing less and it seems to be geared more towards the fans than the players?
Well, you know, I whenever my players would whine about playing a doubleheader or a couple matches, I'd always tell them this story. There was a tournament, Corpus Christi, where you'd have all the top teams there. And I remember us playing North Carolina, and everything was 2 out of 3 set. And we were down 4-2, swept North Carolina, won 5-4, and our coach goes, "Great job, guys. Let's go get lunch. We got to play Oklahoma State this afternoon." And I just remember thinking, like, my players would, you know, because they were complaining about, you know, having to play easier team doubleheaders. And I guess when you look at that, it's just a different time. But, you know, I think people weren't injured as much as they are now. You know, the people, and one thing I will say, NOAAD, I have no issue with NOAAD. When you look at the players in the 80s that played NOAAD tennis, you had some great players that ended up going on and doing well on the pro circuit. I don't think that's as big of a deal if you've got to shorten something. But I think if you look at, you know, a set for doubles, that's kind of scary, man, because half the time my players were still sleeping until about 2-1, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're looking up and you're in a hole. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, just tossing a coin. So, you know, it's very it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out. And there's no doubt that the format at times can be – it was so long. It could be 6 hours, it is, which is a really long time. But I think changes should be made, but not to an extent where you, you know, cut on the sport so much that it's not recognizable. Where you're – it almost seems like when you go in most sports from junior high school to high school, college to pro, you're playing more, and in this situation, playing less.
I decided to take out 5 minutes warm-up time, so you can't warm up with your opponent anymore. You can't figure out what they do well, what they do wrong. You have to figure that out in the match. Now, Tony, was that just was that too big? I mean, were the 10 minutes there? Was it just too long for TV? What do you think?
Well, actually, I'm okay with it because I'll tell you why. Again, if you look at most sports across the board, because, you know, we would go through an extensive warm-up where, you know, we would go out and hit for about 40 minutes, go over the lineup and do doubles drills. So it's really no different than, you know, guys shooting basketball and then jumping. So I think if, you know, that to me is not that big a deal. But again, that's something very traditional in the sport of tennis all over the world that you're eliminating. But at the same time, I'd rather see that cut than, you know, the pro set cut.
Well, it's an interesting change of direction, that's for sure, in regards to time on the court for a college tennis player, particularly when they're playing the matches, versus experience that comes through playing these longer matches, and we'll see how it does. You know, Tony, I'm curious. Do you know, being a former coach in one of these Power Five super conferences, what do you think their end goal here is?
I think that the money is so outrageous that it's kind of hard to justify the salaries that these coaches are making, these administrators are making, NCAA is making, and have the kids that are actually out there receiving nothing. So I think this is a bit of an appeasement because when I first got to LSU, the over athletic budget was about $16 million, and I think now it's probably $130 million and rising. So I think that, you know, when the guy who was MVP of the NCAA championship last year said, yeah, I couldn't afford a burger, all of a sudden all these universities are, you know, building these 24-hour things for food. I think it's twofold, because one of the things that's very interesting in this whole thing is when a lot of the rules and a lot of the TV and all these things were initially adopted, you didn't have every single school in football pretty much is on TV every week on a station that you can get. So that creates more income and revenue. But at the same time, the rules for the student athletes pretty much stayed the same. And so to the point of the UConn kid, I can't remember his name, who's saying, you know, I couldn't go to eat. Well, part of it may be ESPN says you're playing at 8:30 at night, or you're playing at this time and that time. And so TV is dictating everything. And so why not, you know, give the student athletes more? The bad part about it that I can see, schools like Tulsa, Pepperdine, that aren't in those, that traditionally have been great in tennis, that aren't in those Power Five conferences, it's just going to make it a little bit tougher, because the monies that are generated, it's going to be hard to, you're going to have more of the haves or have-nots. A good example, I was talking to a very good friend of mine who was telling me he was recruiting a student athlete, and the student athlete mentioned that the particular school in the Power Five conference was, can give her like $5,000 more money than he can based on these new rules. And you look at like a Georgetown in basketball, who's traditionally been great, a Villanova, that can't do, you know, what these other schools. I think it's getting a little, I think it's out of hand, and I think it's just going to increase more cheating, and it's just going to make it tougher for the have-nots to kind of stay competitive with those Power Five conferences.
Well, Tony, and this is just an opinionated question here. I mean, do you think that long-term here that we're starting to see the demise of men's tennis at the collegiate level? I mean, it is an Olympic sport, as they describe it, a non-revenue-generating sport. It's not a high-profile sport. I was talking last week about all these new names they've come up with for these sports. But, I mean, when you look at the Big 12, they only have six teams playing.
Right.
And then you look at the other conferences. The Pac-12 doesn't have 12 men's teams playing. Now, the SEC is as close as it gets to having a full side of competitive on both the men's and women's side. So when you say money, I mean, doesn't it have a trickle-down effect? If tennis can't prove its worth, then why are they going to give it money?
Well, you know, I actually had a particular men's coach about 2 weeks ago call me just very concerned about these new rules and where men's tennis will be. I think women's tennis, just with gender equity, is going to be harder, much harder. But I guess if you're an AD, athletics was probably started years ago. The mission statement was, we want to give student athletes a great experience to help them grow and educate them, blah, 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 blah. Now the mission statement is win and make money. And so if you're an athletic director and you're strapped for cash and you're looking around and you, all of a sudden you look and you say, okay, I'm going to need $1 million to pay all my football and basketball players, and you say, well, my men's tennis budget is $700,000, you know, to me, that is what would scare me about not only tennis, but other sports. And that, to me, is where the concern comes. However, on a positive note, I think the money is becoming so large with these SEC network, ACC network, Pac-10 networks, that the income flow is a lot greater than it has been. But it's at some point in time, you look at every school. Texas is experiencing it in football. You've seen USC experience it. Michigan's experienced it. Tennessee's experienced it. We have that little bit of dip, and attendance drops down, and you know all of a sudden you're not receiving that same revenue. That's where the concern comes, when all of a sudden there's a little dip in the football program, because Skip Bertman, the AD, used to tell us, football is a train, and if we can ride that train, we're all okay. But everybody can't win in football. And so at a point in time when that drops off a little bit, it can be very concerning for site directors as far as you know, resources. Because Arizona State's men's program has recently been cut. Colorado, yep. You mentioned the Big 12. So I think it's okay for the time being, but in the future it's going to be very interesting to see where this goes.
Well, Tony, now to clarify things, when you say money coming into these programs, this is a lot of TV money. This isn't donor money or anything of that nature, correct?
Right. It's TV money. I think the Big Ten Network maybe generates like $32 million per school, I think, and SEC Network, somewhere like that. So all of a sudden, it's a whole new stream of income that hasn't come. It got everything. You flip on the SEC Network, every sport is on except tennis and golf. But I know the coaches, I know they're trying to figure a way to get on TV, and I think part of it is you got six courts going on, you know, how do you feature it, what do you do? And I think that's where you're seeing, kind of going back to what we discussed a little bit earlier about the changing and scoring and format and all that thing.
That's part of what I'm getting at here. I mean, it's not even for the tennis fan. It's actually for a commercial, isn't it? I mean, isn't that why we're shortening things, to get more advertising dollars into the network so that they can make more money to give to the schools?
Yeah, I think from my understanding of tennis, I think it's just to get it. If I say, hey, Jason, let's go see Rice and Texas play basketball, what time does the game start? 2. You know that from 2 to 4, maybe 4:30, we're going to be there. If I say, hey, let's go see football at 2, you know from 2 to maybe 5:30, you know, you're going to be there. If I say, let's go see Rice, Texas tennis, we have no idea. And so from a standpoint of programming, when you're televising that, you're saying, okay, how long is this match going to last? To have a window that's fairly consistent, where if you're televising LSU, Alabama, Rice, Texas, Florida, Georgia, you know, the time span, those time spans can be anywhere from 2.5 hours to 4.5 hours to, you know, so there's no way really of knowing. And I think that's been the biggest issue that athletic directors have complained about. And I think I could be way off, but just through, like, you know, being sick and maybe a little bit, and just being some of the things I was involved with, I think that's where a lot of this is coming from.
I see. Now, Tony, we're going to run out of live listeners here in just a little bit, but I want to give you a chance. And this goes back to some of our first visits whenever you came on the show to talk about your situation there at LSU, if you're comfortable with it. And just listen, as far as where everything stands and what you're doing over there.
Yeah, well, you know, I filed a lawsuit with LSU, and it was going real well, and 12 days before trial, it ended up getting dismissed, and my attorney said that you definitely should appeal, and so we appealed about 3 weeks ago, and we're just waiting to hear. And kind of the issue that the judge brought out in his decision, he said that a lot of the claims that we made were time barred, and my attorney thought that they weren't time barred, and so that's where the biggest hiccup is in it. So it goes to appeals court, and we'll see what happens from there. But, you know, I'm still very confident. The one thing I will say is, throughout this whole process, There's nothing out of my mouth or anything that hasn't been truthful. And on the other side, there's a lot of things on their side that has been untruthful. And so we'll see how this whole thing pans out, and just kind of keep on my fingers crossed.
Tony, do you think that at this point in that lawsuit, you're battling LSU as a whole, or are you still battling that athletic department?
Oh, probably LSU as a whole, because you're battling. I'm not so sure that the powers that be really understand the depth of everything that went down as to why you need to file the suit. But as this thing goes further and further, you know, as the truth comes out, and a lot of it did with this USA Today articles, but there's still a lot left that that people don't know. And so I think that you would hope that when the truth comes out, that people do the right thing. And so at some point in time, the ball's going to be in their court to you know, take ownership of their actions and hopefully do the right thing.
I mean, as an outsider looking in on this thing, and I've been closely attached to it, thanks to you, because of our affiliation, 12 days before you go to trial, that just seems kind of odd to me. I mean, it just out of the blue, you know, I mean, and we had discussed here on the show how well things were going. Did it take you by surprise?
Yeah, definitely. It took me and I think a lot of people by surprise. But, you know, one of the things that the way I look at it is in every competitive tennis match, as a player coach you're in, you have your ups and downs, and you just got to weather the storm. And so I think the biggest thing for me, it was a total shock, but at the same time, it's just making me better, and it's just making me more determined, and it's just making me – the biggest thing is making me make sure I take a high road and not lower myself. So, I mean, I think the biggest key for this is to just – you know, I've got probably the best attorney in the state, and she's been wonderful. And just look for the positives, because they want you to get frustrated and get down, and that's not going to happen.
So you may have already said it. How long before the appeal, and how long do you think the appeal will take, Tony?
I don't know. I was told it could be anywhere from 5 to 7 months. I was told recently maybe sometime in July. These things – I've learned a lot about the judicial system, let me tell you. And these things do take time, but we'll see what happens when it hits them. And like I said, hopefully right when it did happen, my attorney called me and she said, hey, you know, you need to appeal this. This is not time barred. So hopefully, you know, we'll kind of move forward ahead and hopefully things go away.
Yeah. Now, Tony, before I let you go today, can you remind our listeners when your shows air on the Inside College Tennis?
Yeah, the premiere will be February 7th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time of HBCU. Southern New Hampshire will be February 15th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and University of Minnesota will be March 1st at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Well, very good, Tony. Well, I want to thank you for coming on again. I mean, it's been a great, great time catching up with you, and we're so excited that you do support college tennis in the ways that you and your production company do. Just keep up the good work for us all.
Hey, Jason, a pleasure talking to you, man. We'll catch up again soon.
Yeah, we sure will, Tony. Take care of yourself today.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Coach Tony Minnis, I call him Coach because that's what he'll always be to me. Tony was a great great women's coach there at LSU, very supportive of the things that we did there at Lee when we would encounter him, and just so excited that he's been able to stay involved in college tennis. And I encourage you to catch his shows. They do put off a wonderful story about each school that they encounter on both the men's and the women's side. And we're so thankful that the Tennis Channel has given us, and when I say us, college tennis, some airtime. So hope that you'll check that out, and hope you'll get outside and hit some tennis balls. We'll be back here next week. We'll have some more exciting news to cover, another school to visit. Next week we've got head coach Jeff Marin from Liberty University. He'll be coming on, so try to catch us back here live. And if not, always remember to catch the podcast and tell your friends about us. Thanks. Bye-bye.